not on the ballots in November, probably much to his own personal relief, is Mark Dorison, who is the chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, joining us now in the studio to help wrap us up the week with a new clean-shaven look. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. How are
Yeah,
you
that's
doing?
good. I'm good. So, what do we want to talk about? The board met earlier this week and did a couple of things. One of them was extending water and sewer to the Hillsborough Economic Development District, right? So
That's right. Well,
we're
actually,
continuing
we
that
that's
process,
right.
right?
We ratified an interlocal agreement with Hillsborough about getting water to that Hillsborough Economic Development District, which is just around the I-40 and Old 86 intersection. And so there is, the goal, of course, with all those economic development districts is to have commercial development and not residential. And so that, how we can incentivize commercial development and really, disincentivize anybody from building houses or apartments there is key. And so we're very excited that that is finally, we've got agreement on that and it's ready to go forward. And so.
And we were talking earlier, it's like, oh, water and sewer land for an economic development district is just riveting radio, but it's actually really important. The Morinaga out of the western end of Orange County wouldn't be where it was if the moves hadn't been made to extend water lines out there, right?
That's exactly right. And, when we're trying to develop or draw new economic development places, businesses, companies that are looking at sites, like anybody who would be looking at any to purchase land anywhere is looking at what amenities are available, and water and sewer being a critical one for commercial development. But others also, other access to other utilities is critical. I mean, we were very fortunate in the county with the Morinaga plant that you mentioned, the Great Candy Factory. DOT helped with an access road. There was a service road that runs parallel to the highway. And so those are the kind of things that, become critical factors in the company evaluating where to go.
What else is happening at the county level that people want to know about?
Well, let's see. On Tuesday night, we were presented that there's a opportunity to apply for some funding from the Golden Leaf Foundation, some rare funding from the Golden Leaf Foundation that only comes around every, several years. They have groups of counties, and Orange County is in the group that they're up to this time. So we had a good debate about submitting a couple of proposals. It's a little bit contentious on the Board of Commissioners. Carborough had a proposal that they wanted to be included in the three that were submitted, and there was, some concerns on the commi among some of the commissioners that the project wasn't as fully developed or hadn't been as fully developed as some of the others. And so, by a split vote, that Carborough project was, to me, unfortunately, not included. But there were two projects around exactly what you're talking about, additional infrastructure in the Hillsborough and the Buckhorn EDD Economic Development District, and then also some funding for the continued expansion of PFAP, the Piedmont Food and Agricultural. I don't know what the last P stands
Business?
for.
Is that the one?
It's PFAP. It's the end of the
Oh,
P. So
processing?
processing.
Yeah,
Yes, that's right. Processing. Very good.
yeah. All right. So,
So
what is the Golden Leaf Foundation?
Golden
What are
Leaf is a
they?
foundation that was set up with proceeds from the tobacco settlement.
Okay.
So its primary goal is to promote economic development in communities that were that have suffered economic decline as a result of the decline in tobacco sales.
Okay.
So the most of the focus goes into Tier 1, which are the highest poverty counties in the state. But every year they have this designated pot for grants where they go all around the state. And so how competitive we'll be as a Tier 3, one of the wealthiest counties, is yet to be seen. But it's at least an opportunity for us
When
to
will we
engage.
know?
We'll know if we're invited to fully participate, I think, in about 45 days, 60
Okay.
days.
All
And
right.
then you get to submit a fuller proposal.
speaking with Mark Dorison, Orange County Board of Commissioners. OrangeCountyNC.gov is the county's website if you want more information about goings on in the county. Let's go up a level to the state where everyone's talking today about this judicial primary bill, which essentially scraps the primary elections for judicial races next year, with the idea that they're going to be planning judicial redistricting, which no one wants except Republicans. Harold Sun's got an article suggesting that it might be a way of getting to a merit selection process, which Chief Justice Martin of the Supreme Court has been in favor of, along with Phil Berger, but this seems to be more of a redistricting thing than that. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, it's really a crazy situation.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that seems to make sense is that the goal was to just push all the judicial elections back further past the May primary date, mm-hmm. so that the Republicans can get a constitutional referendum on the May primary ballot to do exactly what you're describing, go to merit selection for the appellate judges and maybe for all the judges, but certainly the appellate judges, and then conceivably push through the rest of this judicial redistricting bill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's really no logical reason to not have primaries.
Mm-hmm.
Although I could say there is in a sort of in my usual paranoid conspiracy theory thinking, which is getting less paranoid and conspiracy theorish. You know, what it means just practically not having a judicial primary means it's just an open election. So if 15 people decide they want to run for Superior Court judge,
yep.
then there's going to be one election. So that could be multiple candidates from multiple Democrats, multiple Republicans,
yep.
unaffiliated candidates. And with no primary, it's just the highest vote getter, the winner takes all, which means you could have people getting elected with 10% of the vote,
mm-hmm.
12% of the vote.
I mean, we had that, 2014? We had 19 candidates for one Court of Appeals
seat? That's right.
Yeah.
And I think the winning candidate got 17 or 18%
like
of the
that.
Vote.
Yeah.
So so one could argue if your goal is to get your ideological candidate in there, throw that person in a field with 10 or 15 others and push all your voters into that one person because they only have to win a small percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one disastrous potential outcome. The other, is that this idea that it's a stall for time mm-hmm. to push through a merit selection proposal for judges. And so that way they don't have no one can say I had any kind of vested right to run for the seat or anything else.
Yeah. And we were thinking about the 2014 race, that one with the 19 candidates on it. First of all, you've got someone who gets less than one out of every five votes and still gets that seat. And then Darren Jackson makes a really good point that if that's the case for a whole bunch of different judicial seats. I mean, one of the proposals that's been floated recently, Republicans have been promoting this, I think this is actually a good idea, is to move the local elections to the even-numbered years so that you get more turnout that way. And the argument against it, which is a valid argument, is, that will lead to ballots that run on for pages, and those races will get sort of shoved under the rug because everyone focuses on state and national issues, which is a perfectly valid argument and would certainly be the case here if you end up with a whole bunch of races with 15 candidates on it. That ballot's going to go on forever.
That's right. I mean, there was a lot of debate last year. The Republicans pushed through a bill to change the order of people's mm-hmm. names appearing on the ballot. There's always a fight about that. And you can imagine in a race with 10 or 20 names, being at the top of that list is
right.
going to make a significant difference. So it's, be a good time to change your name to Aardvark Zeppelin. So
to just change my name to Keck Aaron and just be first
yeah,
on the
exactly.
ballot when I run?
Well,
yeah,
you never know.
Go.
They go by first
name.
They go
first
by
name, last
right.
name. Yeah. All right. So Keck is my middle name and I'm just Aaron
right.
from now on. I'll
or
go with
you just,
that.
Yeah, you could just go with, it's a good time to go with a nickname. So,
oh, nice. Yeah.
I don't know. You can think of one.
Or I could just be like Beyonce or Prince
right, exactly.
and just like Aaron. I'm just a one name candidate.
That's right.
Speaking with Mark Dorison and speaking as attorney, what's your thought on merit selection? Because this is one, I've read Federalist 78 enough times that I'm totally on board with merit selection process and scrapping judicial elections. That's how we do it on the federal level already. What are your thoughts on the state level? Yeah,
I think merits, there's a lot to like about merit selection. The problem is, you say merit selection.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the issue. The issue
right.
is how is the process going to
yeah.
work? So, you know, there are a number of different states that have merit selections. You know, who gets to make the selection is the key. Is, you know, do you have an independent panel that brings forward a list of recommended names? You know, is it going to be the General Assembly making the recommendations? You know, how do you ensure that there's that process? You know, it's kind of like redistricting. If you want to depoliticize it, you know, mm-hmm. there's still a political aspect in determining who gets to make the recommendations
right, right.
And based on what. And so I think it's tricky. I mean, I think, you know, the devil is in the details, as mm-hmm. they say. And so you can imagine a merit selection that is designed very well, that it has representatives from the public, from the legal system, from... you know, from legal groups, from, you know, from the regulatory bodies,
mm-hmm.
That might work well, that picks names. You could also imagine one that, you know, the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem get to make the list and send it to the governor, and he has to pick somebody from that list.
Yeah.
I certainly fear that that's more the direction that we're going to be going in.
Mm-hmm. Again, orangecountync.gov is the county's website if you want more information about what's going on in the county. Mark, we got to wrap up in a few minutes. What,
sure.
What's happening that's good?
Oh, I can just tell you I don't know if this counts as good or not. One of the things that's happening that I have found, you know, re-energizing in all mm-hmm. the gloom is the tremendously engaged activism by students. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, a lot of it is around Silent Sam. A lot of it was around the Center for Civil Rights. A lot of it is around just issues of racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. But I've been at several events on campus, several demonstrations where the student organizing, the leadership, the passion of the speakers, their dedication to really trying to make the campus a more just, inclusive, and equitable place
mm-hmm.
has been inspiring.
Yeah.
So,
and with this generation, and I think this is the case with probably pretty much every generation, with maybe a couple of exceptions, there's always the critique that, oh, they're not engaged, they're not active, they're not, if that were ever the case with this generation, it certainly isn't anymore.
No, not at all.
And,
yeah. and I...
And probably it, wasn't in the first place, but,
I don't think so. I think that, you know, that the folks that are leading around these issues have been leading around them for
mm-hmm.
a long time. I think just a lot more people are paying attention now because
yep.
of what's been happening nationally.
What's going on with the Center for Civil Rights now?
Well, we are looking, you know, we're looking at options to take the advocacy work,
mm-hmm.
which is no longer going to be allowed to continue at UNC, and taking it someplace else so that the legacy of Julius Chambers and the advocacy that represents that legacy can continue. So we're looking at the possibility of setting up a independent 501c3. We're looking at the possibility of talking with other social justice organizations that are doing this work and potentially folding the center in as a project or a program. But we're definitely moving forward with keeping the work alive and keeping the advocacy alive. So I expect that we'll have to be making some definitive decisions within the next 3 months.
Mark Dorison, always love wrapping up the week with you. Thank you so much.
You are too kind, my friend. It's always good to see you.